Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to another special edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you, of course, CONCACAF Champions League. And you know what? I didn't even play the right theme music. Hold on. Let's make this official here.
Welcome to the CONCACAF Champions League Review Show.
Oh, boy, that feels a lot better now. I apologize for that, everyone. But you know what? I got to say this. This has been a great, wonderful CONCACAF Champions League quarterfinal stage so far. But, boy, I tell you, I got to say that this has been amazing to watch. And, of course, we have to start off with that great finish at the Olympic Stadium. Boy, oh boy, that was a great ending.
Play is wide open now. Malice, plenty of room. As Pachuca have five players lined up across the back. An opportunity!
Courtesy of Rogers Sportsnet in Canada, Jerry Dobson with the call, and boy, oh boy, what a finish that was in Montreal. The Impact, down by a goal, down 3-2 on aggregate. They still led away goals by 2-1 at that moment in the 80th minute as Pachuca got that penalty, and then in second half stoppage time, and boy, oh boy, Cameron Porter, give credit to Callum Malice. My God, what a ball that was. What a ball on a string right at Malice, who chested it down with four defenders next to him, one close by, try to foul him just outside the area, and fantastic job by Porter not going down and accepting that chop or that foul attempt by the last defender of Pachuca. He gets into the area, Perez off his line, gets five-hold, nutmegged right in between the legs, and when the ball smashed the back of the net, and when you heard it on Fox Sports 2, oh my God, what an amazing finish that was at the Big O. Of course, we have the head coach of Montreal, Frank Klopas, being ejected. Apparently, he over-celebrated, I guess. I thought he might have said the magic word, and he didn't. But once again, that was a fantastic finish from Montreal as the Impact now advance to the semifinals, and they're going to take on Alajuelense of Costa Rica. But I'm telling you right now, that was an amazing job. That was an amazing finish. Great job in Montreal. And as we continue on, obviously, Alajuelense did what they had to do. They just had to add another goal, and they did so against DC United, even though DC I felt that when they got that first goal late in the first half to make aggregate 5-3, I said to myself, maybe DC can do it. Maybe DC can score two more goals and win this aggregate on away goals 2-0. But as we saw, a lot of bad luck for DC hitting the posts, the bar, just a lot of stuff going on. But I got to tell you, I got to say, you know, once again, these games do matter. These games are absolutely fun to watch, fun to see. And you know what? Great action all around. Club America, all they had to do was score a goal or two, really, because they had three away goals down at Deportivo Saprissa. And let's be honest, Deportivo Saprissa just couldn't really handle themselves, and they couldn't do anything at the Azteca. Another two goals for Club America to make it 5-0. And then, of course, with Olimpia of Honduras against Herediano of Costa Rica at Olimpia. Once again, it just goes to show you that this has been fantastic so far. Obviously, it's a bit disappointing. And on the DC end of things, that's been more disappointing on the MLS side than Montreal. Montreal's been fantastic. And once again, it's just been unbelievable on what's been going on here. And the CONCACAF Champions League, we will have an MLS team in the semifinals. We will have an MLS team in the semifinals, even though it will be through Canada. And we'll see how they're going to do as they'll face Alajuelense. And then, of course, the only Mexican side remaining in this competition is Club America, as they'll be taking on Herediano. But if we've seen a lot of these things, obviously, Club America looks like they're going to win the whole thing. But then again, we'll see what happens. I'm not going to put it past anybody. But obviously, this is going to be, once again, a pretty darn good with how these things are going to happen within the CONCACAF Champions League. Now, before we go ahead and talk about our reporters of how their sides fared and what's been going on, this and this and that and that, Ryan Rosenblatt wrote an article on the Soccer Gods website, soccergods.com, and this was on March the 4th. Apparently, he believes that Major League Soccer needs to drop the CONCACAF Champions League, meaning that we shouldn't even bother with it, because he thinks that it's not as prestigious as these other soccer tournaments going on around the world, club tournaments around the world. Now, let me say that I understand where he's coming from. And look, I'll be honest, I don't have a bone to pick with him. I thought it was a well-written article. I thought it was a great job of him pointing out what the negatives are about this. Now, the one thing I will disagree with him is that the New York Red Bulls, they struggled to get to 10,000 fans to show up for the group stage, which that is incorrect. That is incorrect by Mr. Rosenblatt. In their first home match in their group schedule against Club Deportivo FAS, the lower bowl was filled. There were some sprinkles in the upper deck, but the New York Red Bulls did have over 10,000 fans for that first match against Club Deportivo FAS. The only reason they struggled to get 10,000 fans for their second and last, I should say their second home group match game, which was their last group match game against the Montreal Impact, because people understood already the 0-0 draw that they acquired down in El Salvador, that eliminated them from the top spot to at least have a final clash in the group stage. That's why they struggled to get 10,000 fans for their second home match, their last home match in the group stage of the CONCACAF Champions League. So, Mr. Ryan Rosenblatt, if you are listening, that is your little inaccuracy of this article. Now, once again, I understand that the problems are getting MLS fans or getting these hometown fans into the CONCACAF Champions League home games because of this sort of situation. Now, once again, I have no bone to pick with them except for the one time, except for that one inaccuracy. That's it. Other than that, that's it. Because the lower bowl was filled, and I should know, I was at Red Bull Arena for that game back in August. And boy, oh boy, the arena sounded great, even with 10,000 plus against Club Deportivo FAS. And I remember, Sayer Sen got that opening goal, big roar. Lloyd Sam in the second half, he got his goal, big roar. The only time that the reason why no one was there against Montreal, they were already eliminated. So what's the point of going? And at the same time, Red Bull fans were disappointed because at least they would have had probably 6 points to Montreal 7 and a win against Montreal at home in the final group stage game would have put them in first place. And honestly, the Red Bulls probably would be facing Pachuca in the quarterfinals of the CONCACAF Champions League. So that's the only reason why that little blurb in Mr. Rosenblatt's article I'm challenging, kindly. I'm kindly being kind, challenging it. But the truth of the matter is this. I don't think MLS should drop the CONCACAF Champions League. And once again, it's just a minor disagreement. It's not a big disagreement. It's just a minor disagreement because I thought it was well written. And it's true. The CONCACAF Champions League is not as prestigious as what's going on in South America with the Copa Libertadores and what's going on in UEFA with the UEFA Champions League. So, in all honesty, I have to say this. One day, gotta say this. It will get there. Does it need more work? Yes. That's not the issue. The issue is prestige. Needs the time to allow this tournament to grow. And this is the problem I think we have with us as fans of the game when we want instant gratification and instant satisfaction. This tournament needs to grow. And once this tournament is prestigious, like in South America and like in Europe, then we won't have these types of articles. It needs time. And if we don't give it the time it needs, then all I can say is that we failed. And Superliga is not the answer because it's just Mexico versus the U.S., and then what's the point? It doesn't mean anything. It had its opportunity, and to be honest with you, no one wanted to be a part of Superliga anymore anyway. So all I can say is I believe it is incorrect for Major League Soccer to drop the CONCACAF Champions League. Time to grow. It's been the same thing with Mexico, with their clubs. And at the same time, they have now committed to making this tournament a priority and not just joining the Copa Libertadores. And that, my friends, I believe is the right thing to do. Stay with the CONCACAF Champions League and it will grow to become a better tournament. Let's go ahead and get to the action. Robert Hay of World Soccer Talk on DC United will be joining me. Taped interview, as well as John Jagu from Big Soccer, as he covers Liga MX and the Mexican national team. He'll be calling in at 8:45. But on another taped interview, here is Mr. Kevin Laramie, an excited Kevin Laramie, talking about that Montreal impact.
Forget the formalities, ladies and gentlemen. Just forget everything. You know who's coming on first, because this man and the entire city of Montreal is in dreamland. It's my good friend Kevin Laramie off the Woodworks podcast, who definitely is on cloud nine. Kevin, let's forget the formalities. What was it like being inside the Big O for that big moment in second half stoppage time?
Well, I will never forget that moment. I will never forget where I was on March 3rd, 2015, when all the odds are against you, when your back is against the wall, when it seems like hope is just gone. Well, it's not. Little Irish boy named Callum Malice did probably the best weighted pass I've ever seen in my entire life, right onto the chest of Cameron Porter, which, for a player who was only in his 20th minute of professional playing time, well, he did a great chest. He redirected the pass with his chest, which is perfect, beating two defenders in the same time, and just nutmegs a keeper that's 40-something, 42 years old, and is a legend in Mexico. There's no other fairy tale ending possible. If you would ask writers to write it, they would not even be able to write it that way. Cameron Porter played for 4 years for Princeton, Dan, and if you add up every single fan that attended those games, it would not even amount to the amount that was there on Tuesday night.
Absolutely. I just have to say that it was just a wonderful moment, down by a goal, a penalty goal, converted by Germain Cano. And unfortunately for Laurent Simon, I have to say it was a penalty. Maybe it was helped out a little bit on the dive, but to be fair, it was a penalty, and converted by Cano in the 80th minute, and up on the aggregate 3-2, and it looked like Pachuca was going to ride that goal all the way to the final whistle.
They were thinking the same thing, too. You should have seen Pachuca's response when they scored that penalty. First of all, just to talk about that penalty for a second, Daniel, I do agree with you in a certain way. Yes, I do believe the guy died, Cano died a little bit, but it's been years now that both Montreal and MLS teams been part of CONCACAF tournaments like this one. And we know what's going to happen. We know the drill. We know the story. We have to get used to it. We have to deal with it. It doesn't matter if the guy's going to fall by himself or not. If you don't give him that opportunity, he's not going to be able to do it. If you don't touch him in the box, if you know he's going to dive as soon as you put your hand on his shoulder, you know those types. But you got to know better and don't put yourself in that position.
Absolutely. And Cano places it perfectly past Evan Bush inside the near post. That made it 3-2 on aggregate. Obviously, the away goals rule was at 2-1, but unfortunately, it was taken away, or so we thought. Gotta say, fantastic defense from Montreal on that attack by Pachuca around the fourth minute of stoppage time. 5 minutes, I think, was given. It could have been four. They probably added a fifth minute after the goal was scored. Callum, oh my God, Callum Malice, who created Malice.
Yeah, when you look at it, Dan, if you look at it slowly, he doesn't just get the ball from the play that Donitalia strips the Pachuca player. He gets the ball, and just by redirecting the ball towards the middle a little bit, he actually escaped one attacker from Pachuca. Then he just lifts his head a little bit, looks up front, and he sees Cameron Porter around there somewhere. He sees a little bit of black, so a little bit of Pachuca players there, but he's like, it's the 92nd minutes and 30 seconds. I don't really have a choice. I have to go for it. I see an opening. I have to go for it right now. And it's the third pass like this that Callum Malice did since he's with the Impact. One in the season last year, preseason 2 years ago, and same thing in his first training camp in 2012. So it was just amazing to see. So it's now called a Callum Malice pass. So that Malice pass to Porter, and that reaction from a 20-year-old, Danny, It's mind-boggling to me. 21-year-old, his 20th minute of play. It's mind-boggling. It's the biggest goal in the history of soccer in Quebec.
Absolutely.
Just scored by a guy that only played 20 minutes professionally.
Absolutely. It's amazing. And you know what? With here, with Fox Sports 2 showing, we had JP De La Camera and Yanis Mahalik. I have to give Mahalik a lot of credit for saying, you know, Porter got hit just outside the area. He could have fell down and taken the foul and maybe get a free kick. But you know what? I give Porter a lot of credit for standing on his feet, remaining on his feet, because he did not want to go down. He wanted to take the shot. He wanted to beat Perez through the wickets, through the five hole, as we all say, us hockey fans. Just absolutely a wonderful moment, and over 30,000 Quebecers with a couple of upset over the Pachuca fans, but a great moment at the Big O as Porter converts five hole back of the net. You hear the twinkle of the twine. My God, what a moment.
Nobody believed it was going to happen, Daniel. I was actually right next to the pitch on the sideline, maybe a foot off the starting of the turf. So, and it happened probably 7 foot in front of me where that ball landed. And I was incredulous. I was just watching. I was just looking at Porter running. I'm like, all right, he cleared his man. He's alone. He's on goal. Then I just see he was blocking my view. It was me, him, the ball, and the keeper. So I didn't see the ball go between his legs. But I just saw the ball continue towards the net. And I knew then and there. It was done. It was over. Montreal was moving on. And that moment where I was 7 foot away from the magical prowess that Cameron Porter did. Just the composure that he had on that ball. The first touch chest right in front of him. Directed perfectly. For a gentleman that just comes out of Princeton, it's not known. It's a decent NCAA program. It's a good one, yes. Does it create superstars or player that has that conviction in their play? No. Cameron Porter scored 15 goals in 17 games in Princeton last year. Best in NCAA. Best in his category. He was not the best pick, pick 45th, but since the first day he played in Montreal, everybody in the locker room, coaching staff included, looked at each other like, who's that kid? Where does he come from? Those Ohio-bred boys like Evan Bush, which had a great game, by the way,
mm-hmm.
but those Ohio kids have a different type of breed. Their work ethic is on a different level. So his work ethic and his mentality, he's very smart academically. He's only 3 classes shy of his thesis. So he's really a smart kid. So all that together, I think it shows big promise. And it reminds me of a young Andrew Wenger when he got drafted in 2012. But the thing is, I think Cameron Porter can bring more to the table just because we already saw some achievement from him, and he only played 20 minutes. If he can keep at least like just a little bit of that consistency going forward, it's a sure shot.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, that magical goal, I've been rewinding it many, many times on my DVR. I've been looking at some places, RDS as well, YouTube. Just amazing to see the emotions at the Olympic Stadium, just absolutely phenomenal. I have to tell you, Kevin, very happy to see Montreal going bonkers. We all know it's a Canadian town, it's an NHL town, it's a big-time hockey town, but I think with international recognition now with Montreal, even though when they changed it from a Champions Cup to a Champions League, Montreal still sold out the Big O when you took on Santos Laguna and beat them 2-0 when they were still in the lower levels. Now you're in MLS. Look at this. I think now you're going to see this impact team being discussed tremendously a lot.
Hopefully, right? And hopefully it brings about 50,000 people at the Big O for the semifinal. That's my early prediction. It's still too early to actually get a specific date. Richard Lejeune, which is the VP of the club, said it's around March 18th. That's the date they want. That's the date they're hoping to get. So just circle that date on your calendar 2 weeks from now. March 18th, first game at Zabigo at the Southern Epic versus Alajuelense in the CONCACAF Champions League semifinal. The Scotiabank CONCACAF Champions League final, to be honest.
Absolutely. Yeah. Before we even discuss about what you're hoping to see from Montreal against Alajuelense from Costa Rica, Evan Bush, and, you know, this is what makes me very upset with these referees from CONCACAF. He said, you know, he talked to this referee. I don't know what country he's from. Obviously, he's
Costa Rica. All the referees were Costa Rican.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought there were not supposed to be any Costa Rican or Canadian referees in these types of matches.
Well, it was Canada and Mexico, so being the referees of Costa Rican,
sorry. I made a mistake. That's my fault. You're right. Absolutely right. I forgot. Pachuca is mixing up with Alajuelense with Pachuca. I apologize. Evan Bush says to the Canadian media, says, you know, he talked to him before the game during warm-ups in English, but during the game he wouldn't talk to him in English again when he had a question. And
not just during the game, it's specifically after the penalty.
After the penalty?
He was actually joking and talking with the referee before the game in English, but
yeah.
After the referee called the penalty, he's trying to get explanation from the referee, and he's like, no, nope, doesn't speak in English, just answers in Spanish.
And that's why I'm not happy about this, and this is why I hope Jeffrey Webb and CONCACAF will reprimand this referee, because I don't care what he may be thinking. Yes, if you talk to him in English before the game, and then you talk to him in English after the game, and if you do not talk to him in English during the game, that, I'm afraid, should not happen. This referee, look, if he doesn't want to explain himself to Evan Bush, he has to tell him in English, I'm not going to explain myself, this is my call and that's it. But instead, he doesn't even talk to him in English. He probably doesn't even talk to him at all, or he talks to him in Spanish. That is not fair, and that is not right. I'm very upset about that, and I would like to see this referee get reprimanded by CONCACAF and their head referee in CONCACAF, because that's not right.
Well, at least for once, we got the last word, saying we as a Canadian or American team. Yes, we got CONCACAF at home, but for once, we scored in extra time. When's the last time you saw an MLS team do that to a CONCACAF club, Daniel?
Never.
Exactly.
Never. Absolutely. Okay, so now, Alajuelense, they defeated DC United on aggregate 6-4 over at RFK. They got their big goal there to tell DC you're not going anywhere. What are you most concerned about with Alajuelense when they come up to the Big O for that first leg?
A lot of people are talking about how the Big O is an advantage because of the turf. That's not going to be the case. Alajuelense plays in Costa Rica, and they play on a turf in Costa Rica. So that thing is not going to be an advantage for either team, because both teams are used to it. And actually, to be honest, I think Alajuelense is more used to playing on turf than what Montreal is, with all the new contingent that is playing for Montreal right now. 7 of the starter Tuesday night. So 7 of the starters Tuesday night were new players for Montreal this year. So that does change a little bit, because Montreal only plays on turf once, twice, maybe 3 times a year if you get 3 games at the Olympic Stadium.
Absolutely.
So that for Costa Rica could be an advantage. The only thing that I'm a little more happy, I don't expect Costa Rica, well, I wouldn't say Costa Rica, but it's Alajuelense, I don't expect them to play the same type of football as Pachuca. Pachuca has a couple of outstanding players that are rare in CONCACAF, those skills and talent level. I don't think Alajuelense has those players. Their best scorer, Alonso, is suspended for the first game, so that does favor Montreal for that game at the Big O. So being at home with their best players suspended, with a field that's bigger than theirs, and hopefully they don't have the same type of talent that can use that field, that space on the field, like Pachuca did have, like Lozano did on the wings. He took Cabrera every single time. That's not going to happen against Alajuelense. So I think Montreal, maybe, they're not going to be the favorite on paper. Alajuelense is a better team, in my opinion. They know each other better. They're a great team. And for a Costa Rican team, the CONCACAF is like for a Canadian team. It's huge. It's massive. And it's a big trophy.
It is. It really is. Kevin, good luck with that first leg in the semifinals against Alajuelense. I will talk to you on that Friday after the first leg.
Sounds good. It's a date, Daniel.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye.
And that is Kevin Laramie from Off the Woodwork podcast. Montreal Impact going into the semifinals against Alouenza. It would have been nice to see a DC United Montreal matchup, but that didn't happen. And of course, we all thought, as we did, DC United over and done after that first leg, losing 5-2. They made it 5-3. Alouenza gets that big road goal, at least that big aggregate goal to make it 6-3. DC gets a penalty late to make it 6-4, but once again, they needed two more goals to at least win it on away goals. Robert Hay from World Soccer Talk, DC United supporter, also as well, DC United reporter, talks about it right now.
And once again, here on the CONCACAF Champions League quarterfinal second leg review show, as always, when DC United is being discussed, I always have Mr. Robert Hay Jr. with me from World Soccer Talk. Robert, thanks again, and how's it going?
It's going well. I like to think of myself as a subpar Chris Webb that you like to bring on when he's not available. So, I'm happy to always happy to be on, and I'm glad to get the invite.
And no problem at all. Don't worry. This would have been a tag team if I did invite Webby, but don't worry. He'll probably be on at another time. But still, we all knew the aggregate was not in favor of DC United, down by 3, but even though they scored 2 away goals, you kind of felt that they were going to make that big opportunity and try to get those 3 goals. And I have to be honest with you, Robert, there was a lot of unlucky moments for DC, especially their own goalposts stopping them.
Yeah, agreed. And I think they did what they needed to do in the first half in terms of they scored that first goal. And so they were able to go into halftime with some momentum and knowing the fact that if they got 2 back in the second half, that they would be able to, you know, take the fixture. So in that regard, they did what they needed to do. But, you know, it's always tough to overcome that kind of deficit because, as you saw with the one goal they gave up, you know, you're pushing men forward, you're committing people to the attack, and you're opening yourself up to a counterattack. And at this level of the CONCACAF Champions League, you're playing good teams and teams who are able to take advantage of that. And, you know, it seemed inevitable, I think, that Alouenza would get a goal, and that's what happened, and they kind of broke the back of DC United. And even though they ended up winning the fixture, they get dumped out at this stage, unfortunately.
Yeah, they did. First of all, that was a great goal by Arrieta, of course. Once again, you got him from the Columbus Crew. And, I mean, that was a heck of a rep. I thought, DC United might start this comeback, and it's going – you had plenty of time to get this comeback going, and there was that first goal that made it 5-3 on aggregate. But, once again, it's just really tough when either Alouenza is playing some good defense, the keeper's playing some – making some fantastic saves, or you know it's not your night when you're hitting the post or the crossbar.
Yeah, and you know, I'll get into my little bit of a rant here. I mean, this was a tough game in general. To be honest, the game at time, a farce. The weather conditions were bad. Leading up to the nice little snowstorm the East Coast is getting, we were getting a lot of rain that night in D.C., and RFK isn't exactly pristine to begin with, so the pitch was a mess. And the officiating, which I know you want to touch on, was abysmal for both teams. So, you know, all of that just makes it a much harder hill to climb, plus the fact that, you know, D.C. United was facing a team that was known for its defense with a good goalkeeper. That's a tough hill to climb. And, you know, hats off to DC United for you know, making it a game for a while. I had forgotten that Arrieta had played for Saprissa, you know, so he was involved in a rivalry there, and his goal celebration was excellent. The announcer was questioning, you know, hey, you're down, why are you celebrating? And, you know, I think he had forgotten for a moment, I guess, kind of the heated nature of that rivalry. So it was kind of cool to see, even though DC had some work to do, Arrieta to just enjoy that immensely. So, yeah, it was good to see it, you know, but we always knew this would be an uphill climb.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, let's touch on the officiating. I was shocked to see so many bookings, so many cards given to DC United. 5 yellow cards, Bobby Boswell in the 11th, Harry Kitchen got booked in the 27th, Arrieta booked in the 37th. Davey Arnault booked in the 63rd. And, of course, Chris Korb got booked in first half stoppage time. But the one booking, or shall I say the sending off, for DC was Ben Olsen. And, you know, I don't know what he got sent off for. And I've been hearing from people that he asked a question of what was the foul for, and then the fourth official just said, you're done.
Yeah, you know, I come from a family of officials, people who have officiated different sports. And, you know, one of the big things, I don't think people realize sometimes that the role of an official isn't necessarily always to enforce the rules by the book. And what it really is to maintain a flow and maintain control of the game. And what you saw with this officiating crew and this referee in this match was an absolute failure to do that. Now, if you're a person who's going to referee a game like this, you go in knowing a couple of things. First of all, it's going to be a very physical game. DC United is going to be scrapping and clawing for every advantage they can get to try and make up this advantage. And you have to know that Freeze is going to probably take some dives. And God knows, they should be getting some gold medals for some of the dives that were going on this pitch, and especially since there were water all over. But you have to know that it's going to be physical. You have to know that the passions are going to be high because you're at the quarterfinal stage of this tournament. And you have to manage the game in a way that recognizes that. And they absolutely failed to do that. So instead, they gave yellow cards randomly. And this is for both teams. This isn't a DC United gripe. I think both teams had a reason to be very upset with the officiating.
Mm-hmm.
Inconsistency with the giving of the cards, inconsistency with the fouls, failure to recognize dives, failure to recognize, you know, the severity of fouls and things like that. And, you know, it all added up to the Ben Olsen sending off, which is, you know, again, you've got to know your coach. You've got to know Ben Olsen's a fiery guy. And, you know, I haven't gotten confirmation myself. It's been a busy day. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to check on, you know, everything about the sending off. But, I mean, come on. Seriously, that's just ridiculous. And I think that just kind of typified what this referee and his crew failed to do, which is, you know, allow the game to be managed in a way to let both teams have a chance to get out of there with what they needed. And instead, it turned into a farce. I mean, again, this crew did not recognize what was at stake, what the pitch was like, what these teams were playing for, what their styles were. It almost seemed like they came in knowing nothing and trying to referee it like that. And I think that's a disgrace from CONCACAF. I think you need to do better with your officials. We MLS fans always have gripes about CONCACAF officials, but truly something needs to be done about this crew. And I say this not just from a DC United perspective. I say this from both. I think both teams have a real gripe about this official and his crew, because there are players who could have gotten hurt for no reason, and it was just a joke. It was an absolute joke of a game, the way that they refereed it.
I have to agree with you there. I didn't think the referees were doing anything special for both sides. As you said, even four players from Aluenza got booked as well. Johnny Acosta got booked late in the 87th, Armando Alonso Rodriguez in the 77th, Jonathan McDonald's part of that first half stoppage time fracas. And the goal scorer for Aluenza, Johan Venegas Ulloa, he gets that dagger goal in the 70th minute, even though, you know, 20 minutes left over. You don't know how much time DC was going to get to come back anyway. And we already mentioned it's tough enough to be down by three, and you get down by three again. And Spindola, you know, you finally get your penalty kick, and Spindola converts it to make it a 2-1 victory in this tie. But overall, it's a 6-4 aggregate advantage and win for Aluenza, and they move on to the semifinals against Montreal Impact.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and you know, I think they deserved, obviously they deserved to advance. I mean, the way that they played at home was excellent. You know, again, going into tough conditions in D.C., they played the game that they needed to play. They did what they needed to do, and a well-deserved victory by them. You know, I think they stand a very good chance. I know Montreal had a miraculous win, I guess. I don't know if that's the best way to say it. Miraculous result in their second leg. You know, maybe they're playing with a little bit of gambler's luck. But, you know, I think that overall we're looking at the better team here. And so I think they have a nice little chance to advance even further.
Absolutely. You know, the one thing in that game, and I found this out, I was actually able to go to some of the Canadian sports websites, especially the French language ones from RDS, that runs basically Montreal, Quebec City, and all of Quebec province. And getting some of the interviews after the match, Evan Bush, the keeper, said, well, he was talking to his referee in English, who was obviously a Central American Latin, talked to him in English, no problem. When they were down 3-2 in aggregate because they conceded a penalty, Montreal, Evan Bush went to the referee to try to ask him what was the penalty for, and the referee just wouldn't talk to him in English. And I think and this is where, you know, I understand CONCACAF wants to be better on the world stage, and everything has to come together the right way. And I think I know that it's probably more whichever federation he came from, you know, that's their job to talk to him. But I think CONCACAF, when it's a CONCACAF tournament, doesn't matter if it's national team, CONCACAF Champions League, Gold Cup, you know, these referees got to be a lot better in how they handle or how they're going to officiate these matches. I mean, you can't do this. You cannot intentionally ignore a player, whether he can speak Spanish or not, and just not even bother talking to him because, oh, well, you joked around with him before the game in English, but now you can't talk to him during the game in English? I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, you know, I know it's a different confederation and everything, but I can't even fathom this level of stupidity happening in, you know, the UEFA Champions League, even at the earlier stages. I mean, if stuff like this happened over there, there would be riots in the streets. And I know CONCACAF is not UEFA. I know it's not as well-funded and everything like that. But, I mean, you've got to hold yourself to a higher standard. And I don't think CONCACAF will be taken as seriously in the international world as it wants to be until it starts fixing stuff like this. I mean, it looks like, you know, amateur hour at times with these officials.
Absolutely. And hopefully CONCACAF will contact the federation, whether it's from Mexico or Central America, the Caribbean, even in the U.S. and Canada. I mean, everything has to be fixed here because, you know, you put so much emphasis in this Champions League, you restructured it from a cup to a league, and now, you know, you don't want to see shenanigans like this continue on.
Yeah. I have a feeling we will for a bit longer, but, yeah, I agree with you. This kind of stuff's got to just stop.
So, even though DC United has been eliminated in this edition, once again, you'll be back on your feet for the 15-16 edition of the CONCACAF Champions League. And I don't know if the entire field has been filled out yet, but what do you think Ben Olsen has learned in this round of the CONCACAF Champions League that he can use for the next edition coming up this August?
Yeah, well, you know, I think the nice thing is the team has learned how to manage itself. I mean, you know, I think that one of the big fears I had as a DC United fan going into the first time around, this, you know, August of last year, was how the team would manage its personnel, you know, with a busy schedule and things like that and the bench and everything. But, you know, the team obviously handled itself very well. It had a little bit of an easier draw, but it had the ability to balance league and Champions League and worked out well for them. So I think, first of all, being able to handle the multiple games and multiple competitions was a nice learning experience. But, you know, Ben Olsen's been around the block. He's experienced these kinds of tournaments before. But from a coaching perspective, you know, he probably learned a little bit more about the competition, you know, how these competitions play out. And never to ask a referee a question, I guess, even if it's as innocent as what the foul was, because you'll get in trouble. But in all seriousness, I think anytime you can go through an experience like this, it's a good learning experience. And when you bring back most of your team the next year, that makes it an even better experience because these same players will be going through it again and they'll have this one under their belt.
Absolutely. All right, Robert, thanks a lot, and talk to you during the season and talk to you during the CONCACAF Champions League. Take care.
Sounds good, Daniel.
Robert Hay from World Soccer Talk on DC United, as they did win the second leg by a final of 2-1, but they lose it on aggregate by a final of 6-4. DC United, of course, winning the away goals rule at 2-1 as well. But obviously that doesn't mean anything as they lose on aggregate, the full aggregate, 6-4. That first leg really did them in. And to be fair, all Alajuelense needed to do was just prevent DC from scoring more than 3. They did get that 6th goal. So once again, the away goals are in favor of DC. The second leg total was also in favor of DC, but within the two matches, it was 6-4 for Alawenza, as they, unfortunately, DC United, meaning, will not advance to the semifinals. We will not have a USA versus Canada situation. It would have been fun. It would have been fantastic to see, but unfortunately, one of those things that, of course, happens is this. DC United will not advance to the semifinals. So that's really a bit tough to a tough pill to swallow there. But still, Montreal advances. Will face Costa Rican side Alajuelense. And, of course, on the other side of the bracket, Club America will take on Herediano, who defeated Olympia 2-0 over in Costa Rica.
Hey.
And joining me right now, John Jagu from Big Soccer. John, don't worry about it, John.
Yes.
It's okay. It's yes. Well, John,
how are you, sir?
I'm doing very good. I'm doing very well. John Jagu covers Liga MX sides as well as the national team of Mexico on Big Soccer. A mixed bag, you might say, with some of the clubs. But let's go to Club America first. Obviously, a 3-0 aggregate lead. All three goals were away goals at Saprissa. And, you know, looking at the roster, the starting 11, and the substitutions, it looks like Oribe Peralta really wasn't needed in this one.
Yeah, luckily for him. I mean, you know, with the knock that he took on Saturday in the local league, it was good that he wasn't needed to play, because I think he needs to, you know, maybe take a week or two off to make sure he's fully ready to go. But you're right, though, with the 3-0 win that they got in Costa Rica, they were kind of just coasting, and, you know, they got a couple of goals just to erase any doubt. And, you know, now they're in the semifinal. They're playing a team that just shocks me that they weren't even in the tournament field at all. And now they're in the semifinals and have a really good chance of making it to the final, which is pretty amazing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, Herediano did not qualify for this Champions League. It was supposed to be a Belize club side. Unfortunately, their stadium situation did not meet the demands of CONCACAF when you're hosting a Champions League match. So the Belize team, I think it was Belmopan Bandits, gets kicked out, and Herediano gets a reprieve. And that's the third Costa Rican side in this tournament, and you go with them against Olympia. And I thought, you know, I got to say this. I thought Olympia had plenty of chances and they just couldn't put it away. And Herediano finally got something together and they put it away. And once again, I think we've agreed, Club America is probably going to be the dominant side of the semifinal tie.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one thing we have to keep an eye on is the fact that, remember, Herediano was the team that bounced out León, the Mexican champion that at the time was coached. Excuse me, I have a growling dog. At the time was coached by
Matosas.
No. Well, there's that too. But they were coached by Gustavo Matosas, who's now the America coach. And, you know, one of the knocks on León, not just, you know, in that tournament, earlier this tournament, but last year in the Libertadores, is that they play a great offensive soccer, but when they go up against a team that kind of goes in the defensive shell, they have issues with that. So we're going to see if Herediano does the same thing to Club America that they did with León. Now, I will say that America has a lot more talent than León does, or I should say that they're playing a lot better than they are. So, you know, it's definitely something to keep an eye on. And you know, but, I mean, I think that anyone that, you know, obviously Herediano has a chance, but I think that, you know, America, just because of the fact that they're playing well and rounded in form, probably would be considered the favorite in that tie. Although I think Herediano is going to really make them, they're going to really make them earn it. So I think it should be very exciting.
Yeah, I agree with you. Does it matter that Club America will once again be the road side in the first leg down in Costa Rica? Because to me, it doesn't matter where they're going to play. I mean, they look so solid and they look so dangerous. I mean, what is it about Club America right now that they've found their way out of the doldrums of the bottom of the table, and now they're playing so well?
Well, I mean, a lot of that has to do with the fact that they, you know, just have guys that are that know what they're doing, you know, as far as looking at their coaching and also at the youth level, and then bringing players in, not just because of their name, but, you know, because they fit the team. And they have, you know, guys that are much better at doing that now, you know, and because, I mean, obviously the results speak for themselves. I mean, they struck gold with their coaching. They've done well in the transfer market. They've actually, you know, sold some players, you know, some of their youth players to help them offset coach costs. They're just a very well-run team right now. I mean, and, you know, they certainly should be. Obviously, what I would consider like a model team for North American teams to follow. I mean, they, you know, there's, of course, it helps that they have a gigantic money machine behind them. But, you know, it's, you know, everyone has to make the investment, and they're doing a great job doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. They did a great job going forward. And, of course, once again, this tie was already over. You had a couple of home goals just to really put the final nail in the coffin, and Club America goes on to the semifinals, and they'll take on Herediano, who defeated Olympia 3-1 on aggregate, which, of course, they had a 1-0 advantage on the away goals. Pachuca, that was probably – I wouldn't say it was a strange match, but – it was interesting to watch because you didn't know who was going to get a goal here. You didn't know what was going to happen. And my friend in Montreal, Kevin Laramie, was saying to me, he would be happy with a 0-0 draw. And it nearly became that until the penalty.
Right. No, yeah, it's, you know, Pachuca is just one of those teams that's, you know, somewhat inconsistent, and they're young and they're going to be very talented, but I think when they go up against a team that has a much more experienced midfield, I think that we see that. Now, I know that Pachuca got the, you know, and again, there was contact. I mean, I guess they can call it a penalty. I've seen worse ones called. So.
Mm-hmm.
And but, you know, full credit to Montreal. I got to say that pass that they got in the 93rd minute, you know, the goal was nice, but the pass was incredible. I mean, and it hit –
yeah.
It hit the kid right in the chest, and it was.
He really did.
It was pretty remarkable.
Mm-hmm. It really, really
and,
was.
Yeah,
and
full credit to Montreal, and they had a great, you know, a great atmosphere. It was just a good. I mean, that to me is what this league should aspire to. Is the crowds that we saw, both in San Jose, when Saprissa played, and then in Montreal. I mean, I'm hoping. Unfortunately, if it turns out that Club America makes the final, they would play the first leg at the Azteca. Apparently, that's already been predetermined, which I think is very unfortunate because, I mean, it's like the capital of the area when it comes. You know, it's like the most important stadium in the whole region.
Yeah.
It'd be nice for them to get to host the final, but you know, it didn't work out that way, and that's fine. But you know,
mm-hmm.
it just you know, like I'm someone we talked about over the years. I mean, you know, we know that this tournament has the potential to be this. You see. They're just taking more and more steps every year, and I think that, you know, hopefully, you know, some of these other teams and some of the other media will finally give it the attention that I think it deserves. I think soccer's been great.
Oh yeah, it's been fantastic. I mean, we've got action all over the place. I mean, it's one of those things where I read an article on from Fusion's Soccer Gods show, their website. Apparently, they feel that MLS should really not be involved in this anymore because, you know, the distance and whatever, but, you know, the fans are not coming to the stadiums and stuff like that. But you know what? That's not really fair because, you know, so many people want instant gratification. They have to understand that this type of tournament, and even you've said this many times whenever I've been doing these CONCACAF Champions League review shows, the fans in Mexico didn't care for this. And neither did, you know, the Mexican teams. But then finally something changed, something clicked, and everyone's for it. Everyone's gunning for it. I mean, Monterrey, what, 3 years in a row, CONCACAF Champions League winners. It looks like right now Club America is going to be the next wave of Mexican clubs taking this tournament seriously. I mean, I just think that we need time to make the CONCACAF Champions League into something what it will be eventually.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I think the most important part about the whole tournament is not, you know, the fact that they're playing the tournament, but, I mean, look at look at a side like Costa Rica, who, you know, their clubs have done okay in the tournament. They're not, you know, world beaters by any means, but, you know, they've certainly had their moments. And I think that that's reflected on the national team because, you know, something I've talked about for years, you know, it's Costa Rica, you know, if they play the U.S., you know, if they play other sides the way they play the U.S. and Mexico, they, you know, they have to convince themselves that they're a good team. And I think that we saw that in the World Cup. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that a lot of the local guys have been playing in this tournament because, you know, now they have more opportunities to measure themselves against the other areas of the region, just, you know, that may play better soccer, may play worse soccer, whatever it is. But, you know, what it's given them an opportunity to say, you know what, this team's better than us. You know, we gotta get better. And I think that it's also given, you know, teams like UA, you know, Costa Rica and everyone, I think that everyone respects each other a whole lot more because of the fact that they have a lot more familiarity with how they play. And I think that we're going to start seeing that reflected. We've already started seeing it reflected. You know, we saw it at the Olympics in 2012 with both Honduras and Mexico advancing, obviously in the last World Cup, the three teams that out of the four from CONCACAF. And you know what? In Honduras, they have talent. You know, they also have to convince themselves that they can hang with the rest of the world. Because I think that Costa Rica, I've always thought Honduras is, you know, with, you know, given the one or two just supremely talented players that they can create, I think that they could be, you know, Uruguay has 3 million people and they can become a soccer power pretty quickly. I think, and it's obviously going to take time, but I think that certainly can happen. I think we'll start to see it in Costa Rica. I think it can happen in Honduras. And, you know, and like I said, I mean, any time that makes the region better, I think it makes the region better around, you know, it gives us a better reputation. I think that people are paying attention to it more and they're understanding that, you know, people in Europe always laugh, you know, how is it that Mexico can lose in Honduras? Like, have they ever played in Honduras? I mean, it is not easy. It's a tough place to play. You know, El Salvador is a crazy hard place to play. So, you know, that's why I just love this tournament. I think that would be because of that fact that we're seeing, you know, these guys get familiar with each other and knowing how they play. I think that, you know, that makes it more prestigious now if they could just get a good TV deal, you know, to where, you know, they're not on a channel that nobody gets, you know, for some of the game. But, you know, that would be nice too. So hopefully that'll happen.
Absolutely. So Herr Diano will host the first leg on Tuesday, March 17th. And then Club America will be hosting the second leg at the Azteca on Wednesday, April 8th. John, once again, we could see another tough Mexico versus Costa Rica tie here in the semifinals.
I think we're going to probably see a couple of those. I think that, that it's going to be a Mexico-Costa Rica final as well. I think Alajuelense is going to be well. I think they're just going to be a little too much for Montreal. I think Montreal did a great job. I mean, don't get me wrong, they did a really solid. The way that they prepped for that tie, I thought was absolutely genius. It's exactly what, you know, what team needed to do, and it paid off for them. I think that once they start getting into the flow of playing their league and getting to where they're playing, you know, two games a week instead of just one, I think that's going to catch them a little bit. And I would answer, they're just a good team. You know, what they did to DC United was, stunning. Yeah. And,
yes, it was.
And, you know, so, you know, it's going to be interesting. I mean, I don't think that anybody has a gimme. I think that both semifinals are, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all if one or both ended up going to spot kicks. I think that it's very possible. I think we're going to see that, at least in one of them. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But it's going to be great. I mean, it's what we want in this tournament is good teams, you know, playing well and hoping that, you know, and trying to do things as opposed to teams just trying to survive. You know, I think that all four teams are going to
absolutely, John,
take their shots.
Absolutely. John, thank you very much. Have a good night. And I will talk to you a semifinal first leg review on that Friday. I'll let you know. Thanks again. And I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. Thanks, Daniel. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's John Jagu. Covers Liga MX sides and the national team of Mexico on Big Soccer. And this will do it for our quarterfinal review, the second leg review of the CONCACAF Champions League. Join me this coming Tuesday. We got MLS action starting tonight at 10 o'clock. Unimas, the LA Galaxy, and the Chicago Fire. First kick this weekend. and join me again for your Fire American Soccer Show. Thank you so much. Enjoy your football. Bye-bye for now, everybody.